Wouldn't it be great if you could see all your investment and retirement accounts in one place? With Yahoo Finance, you can consolidate your views from multiple accounts into one hub and access the expert analysis you need to tend to your entire portfolio with confidence. Securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart great investors, and it's how Yahoo Finance ensures that you have the right insight to look at your wealth in its entirety. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination. That's yahoofinance.com. I've been using Yahoo Finance since Yahoo began. I was searching on Yahoo before Google existed, and in fact, my personal email address is still a Yahoo address. But Yahoo remains my go-to site. When I need information about especially U.S.-listed companies, I always go to Yahoo Finance to look that information up. Plus, I also enjoy reading their articles and watching some of their video interviews. I even enjoy participating in their video interviews because Yahoo Finance has been interviewing me almost as long as there's been a Yahoo Finance. So take it from me, Yahoo Finance should be in every investor's toolkit. It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. We all have our own unique challenges when it comes to work, health, family, and relationships. I've got a lot on my plate, and knowing how to recharge is crucial to my mental health. How do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you need some more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. At times, therapy has helped me and my loved ones in many ways, like learning positive coping skills, setting boundaries, and empowering us to become the best versions of ourselves. Therapy isn't just for those who've experienced major traumas. With the right guide, you can discover effective strategies to minimize distractions and truly connect with your needs, setting the stage for a more balanced life. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched up with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/gold today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/gold.
The Peter Schiff Show.
Well, thus far, we are 2 days into the week, and it's been relatively uneventful. Not a lot of economic news that has come out thus far in the week. Of course, what news has come out has been bad, and I'm going to get to that. I think the main reason I'm doing this podcast this evening, you're probably not going to be listening to it till Wednesday morning, is that I am flying down to Mexico. In the morning, I'm going to be down in Cancun for a conference for a few days. For those of you who are going to be down there with me, I'm looking forward to seeing you. I think there's 300-odd attendees, a little over 300. It's Simon Black, Sovereign Man. Last time I went to one of Simon's conferences, it was down in Santiago, Chile. So not quite as far south going to Mexico, but it was a great event, so I'm looking forward to this one. But I wanted to get a podcast done and ready to go before I left. And I will bring my radio equipment down with me, so I probably will get around to doing one more while I'm down in Mexico. So this won't be the only podcast of the week, but there's not going to be a lot because of my traveling. But let's get into some of the news that we got in the markets. And the market's been volatile, but the news, again, what little we have has been bad. On Monday, we got the Chicago Fed National Activity Index. And, once again, everybody was expecting a bounce back because last month the index dropped. It was down 0.11, so it was minus 0.11. And the consensus was that it would rebound to plus 0.15. And that seems to always be the consensus. I'm sure that they're looking for a bounce back in April, but we got the March number. Now, there were some people who thought the number would be negative, right? The lowest forecast was minus 0.26, but most people were looking for an increase. because the mean of the consensus was plus 0.15 and the high end was plus 0.2. Well, the actual number came in at minus 0.42. So basically about double the worst case estimate. And not only that, but they took last month's number, February's number, which was originally reported at minus 11, and now that's minus 1.8. So not only did they miss big time in March because they were looking for an increase and they got a huge drop, but they took the drop that we got in the prior month and made it an even bigger drop. So the three-month moving average, which was 0.8 to the negative when they reported it last time, has now fallen to minus 0.27. So this is weak economic news, and this is the lowest level for that particular number since May of 2013. So about a two-year low in the March Chicago National Fed Activity Index. So again, the markets really didn't seem to care about this number because after all, it happened in March, and I guess March is technically still the winter, even though part of March is in the spring. But I guess anything that's bad in March, we don't have to worry about it. But they're not going to be able to say that, you know, in April and May, because we're going to have bad numbers then too. And they're going to have to come up with a brand new excuse. Now, here's another interesting number that came out. And of course, they're already excusing it. But this is this weekly Redbook same store sales survey that comes out. And the interesting thing about this survey is that it is now down to the lowest annual increase in 4 years. The rate is 0.8. But just in December, December 23rd, right? So kind of late last year, the year-over-year increase was 5.3. And so if you look at how sharply that thing has dropped since late December, the end of the fourth quarter, and now where we are, I mean, I've never seen it on a chart where it's dropped so much so quickly. So not only are we at four-year lows in the absolute level, but the rate of decline over the past quarter or so has been faster than any point I can see in memory. So it's really deteriorating. And what I read of what little reports there were about this particular metric, they're all blaming it on Easter and, you know, when Easter happened to fall. You know, I forget if it was late or early or whatever it was where Easter fell in the calendar that was the responsible. But you can't really explain this because we've been declining sharply since Christmas. So it's hard to attribute a trend that's been existing since Christmas to when Easter happened to fall in May. In April, you know, where in April Easter happened. So people are always looking for excuses. Economists are always trying to come up with one excuse to rationalize why the number is bad. Instead of just dealing with a bad number and saying, hey, the number is bad because the economy is weak. The economy is not nearly as strong as we thought. That's why the number is bad. See, they don't want to admit that. So they always have to find some reason to blame, some excuse, so that they don't have to deal with that reality. They can continue to pretend that the economy is good and, well, we got a bad number. Well, that's not because of the economy. That's because of this other thing that's totally unrelated. Because that's why all the news is always unexpected when it's bad. That's why every time they're looking for a number, they're looking for a good number. But then when they don't get a good number, they come up with an excuse. But here's what, you know, you'd want to think. Why don't they have the excuses in advance? I mean, if they know that the bad number is, let's say, related to the weather, then why don't they expect the number to be bad? After all, they know what the weather was, right? When you get a March number and it's in April, you have the weather report from March. You know exactly what the weather was like. It's not like forecasting the weather in the future. That's hard to do. Anybody can forecast what the weather was yesterday. You're going to do that with 100% accuracy. So since a lot of these excuses are known in advance, why aren't people expecting it, right? And then when they get it, they just blame it on the situation that they should have already known about, and it should have been factored in. In fact, a lot of these numbers are seasonally adjusted. And the seasonal adjustment is supposed to take care of the seasonality, like the weather. And so if you're seasonally adjusting numbers anyway, and then you're making an excuse why the number is so bad when they've already factored in the seasonality into the number, right? None of this is legitimate. It is all excuse making, but we are going to be running out of excuses. You know, especially now, I've been talking about the rebound in the oil price. This week, oil prices moved above $57. That may not sound like a lot, you know, when we were paying $100 a barrel, but oil bottomed out at 42. So percentage-wise, that's a pretty big move. And I think we're forming, as I said before, a very, very sizable W bottom in the oil price. And so I think there's a lot of upside. I don't know that we're going to get up to 100 this year, but we can certainly get up into the 70s. And that's a big move. And that's not going to be unnoticed by the consumer when he, you know, goes to buy his gasoline. But, of course, other prices are going up. I mentioned on the last podcast we got a big increase in the core CPI, bigger than expected, led higher by rising rents, rising healthcare costs. Cheaper gas was a lifeline that is now going to be, you know, taken away. So you add more expensive gas prices, even though they're not as expensive as they were a year ago, they're going to be rising and more expensive than they were a few months ago. That's just going to compound the misery. In fact, we got some interesting news coming out of Canada. And in fact, the Canadian dollar is up about 5% here in the last week or so. And I mentioned last week, too, the strength in the Canadian dollar, which has continued. And one of the numbers that came out last week was the big jump in Canadian inflation, particularly when you don't count energy, because gas prices were still going down, but the price of everything else was going up, most particularly the price of food. Because I think in the most recent month, food prices alone were up almost 4% on the month, not on the year, on the month. And of course, certain food items, certain meats and vegetables, produce are really going up very, very rapidly. And of course, this is all the result of the big drop in the Canadian dollar. And why did the Canadian dollar drop? Because the Central Bank of Canada cut interest rates and said the reason they were doing this was because there wasn't enough inflation. They were worried that inflation would be too low. And so they cut rates, the dollar tanked, now prices have jumped up, and now the Canadians are really having a hard time because the cost of food, one of the most basic necessities of life, is now jumping very substantially. And so I think this is the end of the rate cutting cycle in Canada. They've got more than they bargained for. I don't think we've seen the end of this inflation turn. I think they are going to end up with headline inflation in Canada well north of 2%. And probably before the end of the year, maybe, we're going to have to see the Central Bank of Canada starting to raise interest rates to contain the inflationary fire that they lit on purpose. But I don't think it's just going to be Canada. I think you're going to see central banks around the world having to dial back on their cheap money policies because the so-called threat of deflation is going to be in the rearview mirror. And what they're going to be staring at in the windshield is inflation, is rising prices, and the backlash from consumers. Because consumers don't like higher prices. Central banks may like it, but consumers don't. But we got a little taste of what's in for us here in America today because we had a central banker, and this guy is the president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston, right? Eric Rosengren. He's not a voting FOMC member, but obviously he's high up there. He's a president of the Bank of Boston. And what he says is, you know, pretty representative of the way people think there at the Federal Reserve. And what he said today was that he thought our 2% inflation target was too low, meaning that we ought to target a level of inflation higher than 2%. Now, how high does he want to target? He didn't say, right? I mean, is it going to be 2.5? Is it going to be 3? Is it going to be 4? I mean, what is the target that Eric Rosengren thinks would be appropriate. Now, the reason he says we need higher inflation is because he thinks that gives us leeway to pursue more growth. That the thing holding us back is this fear of inflation. And if we can just raise the target maybe to 3%, the Fed can be a lot easier. We can keep interest rates lower for longer if we're willing to allow the inflation rate to move up, right? But of course, we know that cheap money doesn't create economic growth and doesn't create employment. It actually undermines both. But if you believe that no matter what, see, this is the vicious cycle that you find yourself in. So you use cheap monetary policy to grow the economy and create jobs, and instead it weakens the economy and destroys jobs. And now you're staring at a weak economy that's losing jobs, and you think, oh my gosh, we need more stimulus. We need even more cheap money. We need to print more money. And now, you know, you start having inflation, but you're not getting the economic growth. And then the conclusion is we just don't have enough inflation. We need 3%. Maybe that'll do the trick. 4%, 5%, 6%. The problem is the more inflation you create to create growth, the slower the economy gets in real terms, which means the more inflation you ultimately have to create until you eventually figure it out. But of course, by the time you figure out, it's too late because you've dug yourself in a Grand Canyon of a hole that now it's impossible to get out. But the fact that you've got these guys at the Fed, this is just the beginning. Because if I'm right, and look, the dollar has turned, and it seems to me that the dollar has turned, that it's peaked, you know, and the dollar has turned, oil has turned. And if this is the case, then a weakening dollar is going to put upward pressure on already rising consumer prices. And these numbers are going to start to be north of 2%. And the Fed is already trying to lay the foundation for why they won't raise interest rates with rising inflation. And we already know that if the job market has already peaked out, right? The Fed is saying they expect the unemployment rate to go down to 5% from 5.5. What if it goes up to 6 instead? Goes in the other direction. Well, now they're going to need QE4. Forget about rate hikes. But the only thing that might stop them would be if inflation was up at their 2% target, unless they've already said, let's have a higher target. We're not worried about 2%. We're more worried about the economic slowdown. And so we're willing to have more inflation. And after all, inflation is not a bad thing. But of course, the consumer, just like the Canadian, doesn't like higher prices. That's why everybody wants to shop at Walmart. They advertise everyday low prices. They don't advertise everyday high prices. But economists think that prices going up is a good thing. But you see the backlash. And the problem is, we can't do anything about it. I do believe that other countries are positioned to stop the inflation. So once countries see inflation rates north of 2%, countries that are fiscally solvent, that are in a position to raise rates because they can afford it, will do so. The problem is, all we can do about inflation is talk tough. It's like the opposite of Teddy Roosevelt, right? He was speak softly and carry a big stick. See, we scream and we have no stick. And we're screaming so loudly because we don't want people to realize that we don't have a stick. All we've got is the capacity to scream. But if that doesn't work, we can't back it up with anything. I mentioned on my last podcast, I mentioned Teddy Roosevelt, you know, only in kind of like a negative way, because when they talked about, Teddy Roosevelt in the Hall of Presidents, they only talked about his trust busting, you know, his attacks against big business. I mean, you know, they didn't really go into his foreign policy or that aspect of his foreign policy, I was a fan of him in that respect. It was just his economic policy and his, you know, anti-monopoly or trust busting, that kind of stuff that I didn't like. But that was the only thing that Disney wanted to highlight, was the fact that he was anti-business, and that's what made him a great guy. Plus the fact that he was the related to Franklin Delano Roosevelt. He was his uncle or whatever he was, and that also, because they wanted to tie in one Roosevelt with another, who was probably their favorite president. No, I thought about this after I recorded it, because, you know, I was also talking about Paul Krugman. And then I thought, you know, Gino, if they had a hall of economists, a hall of Keynesian economists, at Disneyland, right? The way they have a Hall of Presidents. See, the Hall of Presidents is in Liberty Square, right? Even though, you know, the presidents that they featured weren't the leaders of liberty, they were the destroyers of liberty, most of them anyway. But I said if they built something like that for economists, and it's certainly for Keynesian economists, they'd have to build a whole exhibit in Fantasyland, because that's the only place that Keynesian economics belongs, is in Fantasyland. And the fantasy of this Keynesian recovery is about to come crashing into the reality of a renewed recession, depression, and a currency crisis. And I'd like to see Paul Krugman wiggle his way out of this one and try to argue you know, why Superman or Super Krugman, whatever he calls himself, how somehow he was right in all those crazy free market Austrian school, what does he call us, Austerians or whatever it is, how we were so wrong and he was so right when this whole horrible experiment of his, you know, it's just like a little kid, you know, blowing up a chemistry set, because that's really what Paul Krugman is. He has all these chemicals, these Keynesian chemicals, and he throws them all together and he expects something great to happen, and he ends up blowing himself up. And that's exactly what's going to happen, except it's not himself that's blowing up, but he's blowing up the U.S. economy. But it's going to be interesting to see how he rationalizes this, because he may be the very last person to acknowledge that he was wrong. I mean, everybody will figure it out before Paul Krugman does. Hi, this is Peter Schiff, and long before foreign governments and hedge funds were buying gold by the ton, I urged my clients to put 5 to 10% of their portfolios into physical precious metals. Despite gold's massive rise over the last decade, I still think that a 5 to 10% allocation to gold and silver is a smart investment decision. But buyers have to beware. Big TV gold dealers push all sorts of coins that are poor investments. Bait and switch deals, price protection guarantees, leveraged gold accounts. These are just a few of the sleazy tactics used to swindle inexperienced gold buyers. My gold company is different. We never offer a coin or bar unless I consider it to be a good investment. I want my customers to be educated. That's why I'm offering you a free research report exposing the biggest scams and ripoffs in the industry. Download my report, Classic Gold Scams and How to Avoid Getting Ripped Off, for free at goldscams.com. This report tells you everything you need to know about how to avoid losing thousands of dollars with scam gold dealers. It even tells you how to tell if a salesman is lying to you on the phone. This is a must-read for anyone considering a gold or silver investment. Download this free report today at goldscams.com. That's goldscams.com.